It's the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Welcome to Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're going to have a chance to look at two sports betting initiatives on the ballot for the November election.
Prop 26, not a dime to solve homelessness.
Who's behind these deceptive ads attacking California Indian tribes? It's the Card Room Casino.
Now, Prop 26 would legalize sports betting at tribal casinos and the state's four privately owned racetracks. It would also add a new way to enforce state gambling law in card rooms. Now, card rooms and the cities that rely on card room tax revenue aren't very happy about this. They say that it'll be abused to shut card rooms down, and city budgets will be the collateral damage. But tribes want you to vote yes, because they say there's nothing to worry about if card rooms are operating legally. Here to explain for us, KCRW's Megan Jamerson, who's been following this debate, and she's with us right now. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Steve.
So sports betting is not legal now in tribal casinos, but I bet, see what I did there? I bet a lot of them want it because it would be a lucrative business, right?
Yes, some tribes do. About a quarter of the state's tribes have thrown their weight behind this proposition. And these tribes are saying that by giving them sports betting, it will further increase their self-sufficiency. They can help rural tribes, and they can also give back to the cities they are in. They say, look, we've done all this great stuff with casino revenues, building homes, hospitals, and schools. And they also say that because sports betting is inevitable in the state of California one way or another, this is the most responsible way to introduce it because, you know, it'll be in person at their casinos. And they say, look at our track record. They've been very responsible stewards of gambling. They also say that the state will benefit. The California Legislative Analyst Office, the nonpartisan office, they've reported that the proposition could bring tens of millions of dollars in state funding.
There is another really important part of this proposition, though, that has to do with card rooms. So talk a little bit about that.
That's right. There's a legal provision in Prop 26 that has nothing to do with sports gambling, but it's really important. It has to do with the main difference between tribal casinos and card rooms. So in card rooms, you play cards for money, but you don't bet against the house like you do in Las Vegas casinos. Instead, card rooms hire these third-party professionals to sit behind chips at each table and act as the bank. And tribal casinos say this isn't legal according to current state law. So, they say only tribes get to have Vegas-style gambling, and they've tried to take card rooms to court on this, but those lawsuits never went anywhere. So this new enforcement measure in Prop 26 would allow anyone, including tribes, to sue card rooms over third-party banking. And there's also another player here that has strong feelings about this.
Who's the other player?
Cities. So, you know, think about it. Wherever there's a card room, there's a bunch of tax revenue being kicked up to city governments. And all these cities want nice, healthy card rooms. There are 78 cities in the state that rely on card room revenue in this way. There's five right here in Los Angeles County. Those are Bell Gardens, Commerce, Compton, Cudahy, and Hawaiian Gardens. And I'm really not kidding when I say they rely heavily. Take Hawaiian Gardens, which is the smallest city in Los Angeles County. Over 70% of its revenue comes from the city's local card room.
More than two-thirds.
More than two-thirds.
Wow.
It's tremendous. And here's Siobhan Moore-Cage, assistant to the mayor of Hawaiian Gardens.
You know, talk about all of your eggs being in one basket. That card room is the economic engine that makes our city run.
So these small cities are against Proposition 26, and so are the card rooms themselves. And these card rooms are saying they fear facing frivolous lawsuits.
Are they justified in fearing that? Is any of that true?
Well, the tribes have said that they, you know, they do want the law followed. That's why they want the ability to sue. And card rooms say that the tribes want to put their competitors out of business. So basically, voters are being asked to choose sides. A yes vote will mean tribes can sue card rooms, and they can also have betting on sports at their casinos and only at their casinos. A no vote would leave things exactly the way they are.
Megan, will tribes even get a chance to sue, though? Because the last polling I saw had Prop 26 pretty low, right? It doesn't look like it's going to pass.
Right. Well, the latest UC Berkeley IGS poll is putting Prop 26 at 31% approval rating. And I asked Kathy Fairbanks, she is the Yes on 26 spokesperson, about this, and here's what she said.
Voters are just confused and they're seeing a lot of ads, and all of this is just turning into a confusing soup for voters. And when you've got that, voters tend to just say no.
And besides Prop 26 being really confusing, you've got Prop 27 out there, and that's to legalize online sports betting in the state. And I think likely having these two competing sports propositions on the ballot was just more than voters could handle. And, you know, because sports betting has the potential to be enormously lucrative, this issue is not going away. There's already talk of a proposition for 2024.
And the polling for Prop 27 doesn't look good either at this point, right?
It's very poor as well.
And a lot of confusion for sure. Well, thanks for helping clear this part of it up. KCRW's Megan Jamerson. Megan, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Coming up, what will it be like if most of the big grocery stores in LA are owned by the same company? You may very well find out soon enough. A look at a giant merger proposal on aisle 9 after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's a proposed merger that could rock the Southern California grocery scene. Kroger is in talks to buy its rival Albertsons, which would bring a lot of supermarket chains under one umbrella in a $24 billion deal. That includes Ralph's and Food for Less, which Kroger already owns, in addition to Vons, Pavilions, and of course, Albertsons. With inflation still relatively high, some critics of the deal are worried how it would trickle down to you and how much you spend at the supermarket. To tell us more, Russell Redman is the managing editor of Supermarket News, a supermarket trade magazine based in New York. Hey, Russ.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Jamie Cord is also here. He's the president of LA-based Consumer Watchdog, a nonprofit advocacy group. Hey, Jamie.
How you doing, Steve?
All right. Russ, I'm going to start with you. If it's approved, and that's not been determined yet, if it'll be approved, it still has to go through the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice. How will this merger affect Southern California, where there are plenty of nameplates owned by both companies right now?
Well, I guess it's going to kind of have the same effect just about anywhere where the chains have overlapping stores. But the West Coast is one of the primary areas where Kroger and Albertsons both have some market overlap. As with any merger, there's going to be some sort of shakeout of retail banners and store locations. And as you mentioned, the regulators will be looking over this very, very closely on a market-by-market basis, which has been the kind of the way they've approached similar mergers of this size. So they're going to try and gauge the competitive impact pretty closely on a market basis.
On a market basis. Jamie, Kroger has vowed that if the proposed merger goes through, that the prices will go down. Do you think that's going to happen? How can you make that kind of prognostication?
Because they want the merger to go through. I think exactly the opposite is going to happen. I mean, we have, as you know, in Southern California, we have Ralph's, we have Vons, we have Pavilions, and there are going to be less of them if this merger goes through. When there's less competition, prices generally go up, not down. But there's also going to be less choices, and there's going to be fewer jobs. And that's the point of the merger, is to create what they would call economies of scale to, you know, theoretically get a better price on things, but the theory doesn't always come into practice. I'm more concerned about convenience. I'm more concerned about choice. I'm more concerned about, you know, these stores shrinking, the jobs shrinking. And I am concerned about prices going up because, you know, they do already have quite a bit of buying power. And I don't think they're going to get much more buying power out of this. And if they do get much more buying power, I think the benefits are going to go to the shareholders, not to the consumers.
Russ, why is Kroger wanting to do this, to merge with Albertsons? Why do these companies want to get together? Is this a competition thing? I keep reading about they want to go and compete with Amazon and Walmart. Is that what's going on here? Is this about shareholders, and is this about making money? I mean, what's going on here? Is it greed?
It's basically there's always the need for more scale. They're always pushing for more scale. Even companies the size of Kroger and Albertsons are facing pressure from Walmart for quite some time now, since they jumped into the grocery arena, and from Amazon, which more recently has done that. They are huge competitors with some advantages in scale and the way they operate over Kroger and Albertsons, and they're trying to achieve the same thing. The more efficiencies and synergies they can get, the more they can theoretically pass on savings to customers. When they announced the merger, they actually mentioned that they're going to invest $500 million into price cuts and reductions and so forth. But just as Jamie said, the maxim, of course, economically, is that the fewer competitors, prices tend to go up. So it's kind of a double-edged sword here. We have to wait and see. But Kroger and Albertsons, as conventional supermarkets, definitely are facing pressures from the likes of Walmart and others such as Aldi to lower their prices to compete, especially in this current environment.
And you mentioned, Russ, this model that, you know, Amazon and Walmart, these are companies that ship things to the home as well, right? Is that what Kroger wants to get into?
Well, Amazon does that. Walmart is huge in e-commerce now, of course. And remember, these aren't pure supermarkets, grocery stores. Anyone in this retail channel, which is food, drug, mass retail, is looking to be able to offer more online. I mean, we saw since the pandemic that there's been an explosion in online grocery shopping, and it's not been profitable for anybody now. So they're trying to do whatever they can to kind of fine-tune their model to make it profitable, and scale is part of the equation there, because it requires massive investments in technology and operations and distribution and fulfillment, which Kroger has been doing right now, more recently with its partnership with UK-based Ocado Group to build these robotic fulfillment centers in different markets to help expand their reach and provide these products more cheaply on the cost, on their cost side, and hopefully to the consumer as well.
Right, but it doesn't matter how cheap these products are. If you don't have a job, you can't afford them. And the jobs are something that I look at, and I'm like, all right, so all this overlap, are a lot of people, Jamie, going to lose their jobs here? And these are, some of them are union jobs, right?
They're all union jobs in Ralph's and Vons and Pavilions, and that's the problem. We've made a choice in L.A. City, for instance, not to accept Walmart's here. Walmart isn't a player in the market because we said we want union jobs here. We're willing to pay more if we need union jobs here, a little bit more anyway. And they are going to be clearly cutting some stores because that's how they get the economies of scale. That's going to be cutting some jobs. And I do think it is an attack on the unionism, because if you look at Walmart, you look at Amazon, you look at the competitors, those are not union jobs. And I think it's a different market also. I think Costco is a different market. I mean, if you're going to go for the big buyer club, you're going to go for the big buyer club. If you're going to go to a Ralph's or a Vons, you're a different type of neighborhood shopper. And I think it's good to have choice in a market for consumers. It's good to have those choices. Clearly, they're going to shrink the choices, and unfortunately, they're going to shrink the jobs. And that's why I think the Biden administration really needs to not approve this deal. It's just too much.
There are a lot of food deserts too in Southern California. Could the merger potentially exacerbate that, Jamie?
I think it could. I mean, we've only in the last maybe, what, 5 years, 10 years, you've been covering this, really started to penetrate South LA with some stores, and it's not even as penetrated as it should be. I think this will probably shrink options there more than anywhere else. And I think that let them get into this race to the bottom, where we're going to close stores, we're going to try to get to this maximum efficiency. It doesn't usually translate into lower prices for the consumer, and maybe it will in the short term, but it'll certainly translate into fewer choices for consumers, particularly in consumers in places where they've had a harder time holding down grocery stores.
Russ, what's next in this equation? I mean, it was announced on Friday. What happens next? Does it go to the Federal Trade Commission?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the next big thing. It's a pretty high hurdle they're going to have to jump to get approval for this agreement, I think. I mean, the way they structured the deal was that they formed a company to accept a kind of a spinoff company, and that's where they're going to place these stores that are earmarked for divestiture. I think they said anywhere from 100 to 375 stores. I think to get something like this approved, it's going to be more than that. And this process is going to take a while if any recent deals are any indication.
Do you think this deal goes through?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really not sure. I mean, from analysts right now seem to think it will. I mean, I'm not so sure about that. I think it's really tough to call right now because I think it's going to really be gone over with a fine-tooth comb, as it should be, with a merger of this size in one sector. So I think we still have to wait and see.
Russell Redman, the managing editor of Supermarket News, a supermarket trade publication. Jamie Court, president of Consumer Watchdog. Thanks to y'all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Onward now with Greater LA, where the snitch scandal is back down in the OC. It was a scandal that had more tentacles than an octopus. The DA's office, the sheriff's department in OC, the attorney general of California, even the U.S. Department of Justice. Well, the sheriff's department apparently used jailhouse informants in an illegal way, and the DA's office hid evidence from defense attorneys. And because of that, OC had sentences in more than a dozen criminal cases overturned or lessened between 2007 and 2016. Well, federal authorities have been investigating ever since, and they just came out with a damning 63-page report. LA Times columnist Gustavo Arellano's here with Greater LA's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
So first, a quick history lesson, if you will. What were the sheriff's department and the DA's office doing wrong in this so-called snitch scandal?
So for years, before 2012, so at this point, almost like 15 years ago, the sheriff's department started doing this secret database of jailhouse informants, colloquially known as snitches, in which they were gathering information that the sheriff's department would then pass along to the district attorney's office, and they were able to get many convictions like this. And this entire program was kept under wraps until this tragedy happened. In 2011, there was a massacre in a beauty salon in Seal Beach that killed, I believe it was 8 people, and the person who did the shooting, Scott DeCry, he confessed right there and then. So it should have been a slam dunk, easy conviction for Tony Rakakis, but they kept using jailhouse informants even on him. And if it wasn't for the public defender of Scott Sanders, none of this would have ever been exposed. But he found out about it, and he did not shut up about it.
The OCDA now is Todd Spitzer. The new report from the Fed says he's implemented some reforms to make sure this doesn't happen again. But they say Spitzer's office still doesn't really know the full scope of what happened, of the cases that were affected. What do they recommend that he do about that?
Yeah, the report was really damning against Todd, and I'm sure it bruised his ego hugely, because Todd Spitzer, of course, ran against his mentor, Tony Rakakis, 4 years ago, beat him, mostly because of the snitch scandal. Todd said, I'm going to clean up the DA's office. I'm going to go after the sheriff's department. This is an embarrassment to law and justice in Orange County, and I'm going to start implementing all of these reforms. And this federal report that just came out, it did say Todd has done some stuff, but not nearly enough, and really has not tackled the scope of this. Because there's already been 6 convictions overturned because of illegally using jailhouse informants under the Rakakis and also Sandra Hutchins, the former sheriff of Orange County, their administration. And if there's other ones out there, the district attorney's office right now under Spitzer is not doing it. So one of the big things that the Fed says, like, do an independent review, do an independent panel, is going to go through this. And that's the last thing Todd wants, because Todd is the, you know, he imagines himself the cowboy riding a white horse with a white hat saying, I'm going to take care of everything. And if someone's saying, nope, you can't do it good enough, he's going to get mad.
What about the sheriff down there, Don Barnes? I mean, the department says it's implemented reforms to that informants program. Does it still have such a program?
Well, this is a sheriff's department. Any sheriff's department's always got to be a little bit interesting when it comes to reform. And with Don Barnes, it's the same thing. Like, he was the handpicked successor to Sandra Hutchins. So he has said he's tried to implement reforms, but the feds also don't believe it at all. And of course, the sheriff's departments just all over the United States are always going to be especially hesitant to have anyone with any independence look into what they do, because they really believe that the public should trust them, never mind all the scandal from the past. And Barnes, let's not forget, Barnes was under that administration under Hutchins where this jailhouse informant scandal was happening. He'll always say that he knew nothing about it, but it was definitely happening while he was a sheriff's deputy himself.
Talk a little bit about, and she's in town, by the way, the vice president now, Kamala Harris, who was then the attorney general of the state of California. What role did she end up playing in this story? Because there is something there.
No role at all, because Scott Sanders, an activist in Orange County, they begged Kamala when she was attorney general to do something about it, and she did absolutely nothing. Years later, when she was U.S. Senator, the New York Times asked her about this, and she said, oh, yeah, you know, there was injustices happening, but it was being taken care of on the local level. That's like saying, oh, yeah, you know, the fox, he'll be able to take care of the hen house this night. I totally trust him with it. And so if you talk to the folks like Sanders and in Orange County to this day, they are no fans of Harris, because this could have been investigated a long time ago. But in fairness to Kamala, the person who followed her, Javier Becerra, also did nothing. And Rob Bonta, you know, he's still relatively new on the job, but so far he has done nothing.
And the state, it actually took the case away from local prosecution, right?
Well, yes, because Judge Thomas Gothel's kicked off the entire district attorney's office. The district attorney appealed, and Kamala Harris sided with Tony Rakakis in saying the state should not take over the case. An appeals judge said, nope, the state has to have it. And so the Decry murder case eventually was argued by the state, and of course he got convicted. But what an embarrassment for Kamala. And of course, she doesn't have to worry because she's up in the White House, but that's going to be part of her legacy.
Was anyone held criminally accountable to this? I mean, the judge at the time, this is OC Superior Court Judge Gothels, as you said, he said local law enforcement officials either intentionally lied or willfully withheld material evidence from this court.
Not a single person. Instead, again, you had 6 convictions overturned. And shout out, by the way, to my former colleague, R. Scott Moxley. He was the one who broke most of this stuff. And also kudos to Scott Sanders, who he was maligned so much by the right for so many years. And this is vindication. And this is not over, because it implicated Spitzer and Barnes, and they're still in power until they actually do reforms. Jailhouse and prosecutorial misconduct is still going to happen.
Gustavo Arellano, LA Times columnist, and of course a regular here on GLA. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, there's a redrawn congressional district in the desert, and now the Republican incumbent, who has in the past been opposed to gay rights, is in a race for a seat that includes Palm Springs. Can his evolution on LGBTQ plus issues keep him in that seat? That's tomorrow on Greater LA. Online anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. Share a story idea, would you? And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast as well. kcrw.com/GLA. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Jay Siebold, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your time and attention tonight. Have a great night.